Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's happening?
I'm glowing.
Nice.
I'm in the afterglow of a lovely evening. Last night, my daughter, Kirsten, my husband, Chris, and I all went up to the Mid-State Fair to see John Mayer in concert.
Did you get a corn dog?
You know, it is a tradition to have the corn dog, a bite of the corn dog. I get a bite of the things that I feel like I really want to have, and I never eat the whole thing because that's just disappointing. But yes, definitely had to have that. It was really cool. You know, the evening was comfortable. It wasn't too hot. It was a really nice night. It was something I'd been looking forward to for a really long time. And I'd seen him last time he came through town, and he did a super bluesy show, which was great. I loved it. It was kind of off, you know, in another direction of what people would recognize him to do. It was great. And then last night he came and played all the hits. He came and played everything you recognize. And you can tell the audience was mostly women who were just swooning of all ages. But it wasn't sold out, which kind of surprised me.
When you saw him do the blues show, where was that?
That was at the fair a few years ago. I don't know how many years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7. I don't know. This time around, he came and played the hits, and it was fun. It was a really fun evening out. But it was kind of like this mixed feeling I was having, because about 6 months ago when they announced the fair schedule and I saw he was on it, I got really excited because I thought, okay, this is going to be kind of my stretch goal for the summer. I'm going to see if I can somehow get an interview with him when he comes to town and start putting out my feelers or see who I can know who knows someone, you know, that 6 degrees of separation. And because in my head I thought, I have a great pitch for doing an interview because I'm not a Rolling Stone person or, you know, a mainstream media person. I, you know, I'm a professor and I use a lot of his songs in my class as examples of different psychological states, because it's interesting if you listen to his lyrics, songs like Daughters or No Such Thing, if you're a John Mayer person. But the lyrics sound like someone with a psychology background wrote them because they exemplify different family systems things. So I use the songs. So I wrote this long email and kind of got it to someone who got it to his publicist. Like, I felt like I was getting there. Now, this is so exciting. And over the course of the months, I was going, oh, this might really happen. And you know, that excitement and anticipation of maybe things are going to happen. But I didn't. But it didn't happen. I got so close and the publicist responded and we went back and forth and then kind of just went away. So then I had that kind of crushing disappointment of being close to something fun happening and then not having it happen. But the show was still really fun. The show was still really fun. And it's interesting because when I talk about his work, John Mayer's work in my classes, I always refer to him as the voice of the millennials. You know, even though he's kind of douchey in his public persona, his lyrics are very astute. And so I've been using that. And I've been teaching this class for 8 years now. And I realized last night that when I started teaching this class and using his songs, he was about 31 or so, and my students were all 21. So it was kind of in that generation. But it dawned on me last night looking at him and seeing him coming into 40, he's just about to turn 40, that now he's 20 years older than my students, and so he may not be my relevant soothsayer anymore for psychological stories. But anyway, even though I didn't get to have the interview that I had hoped for, John Mayer's still going to be a part of the conversation today in inspiration and in tempo and in lyrics in some way. So we're going to talk about being excited about things coming together, dealing with the disappointment when they might not.
Swim inside it, we could string some lights up the hill beside it. Tonight the moon's so bright you could drive with your headlights out. Cause a little bit of summer's what the whole year's all about. Your feet up next to mine. We can watch that waterline get higher and higher. Say, ain't it been been some kind of day. You and me been catching on like a wildfire.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And, today's underlying theme is John Mayer. Not the theme, I guess the inspiration. The theme went a different direction. And you'll be invited to be a part of the conversation, as always, 781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, if you'd like to leave a message there or find out about upcoming shows. We post them every week. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. We're right there, and Bree does a great job of updating our shows every week to make sure that we're current. And you've been great, Bree, also, because people will write and say, when can we hear last week's show? And it's up almost an hour after we're off the air. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
That on-demand listening works really well. And if you'd like to podcast the show and listen at your convenience, you can go to Apple Tunes or however you subscribe to podcasts through NPR One. Just search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and they will be uploaded to your device. And if you write a review or something about it, that also helps get the word out to other people about the show. So that'll be exciting. I guess it would be exciting for us. As I mentioned before, I had had this goal, this reach goal, to try to get this interview to happen, and it didn't happen, which is okay, because in many parts of life, there's things you look forward to and you're excited about, and they don't come to fruition, but it doesn't diminish how much fun it is to prepare and think about and get excited and anticipate something coming your way. And so there is kind of that cycle we go through, you know, that fun of planning and looking forward to something, having those, you know, kind of butterflies, and then having it come true. And you just, that's one of the greatest moments in life, that the anticipation is as great as the actual event. But there's a lot of times in life, and I would argue that maybe more often in life, there are things that we think about, we're excited about, we kind of stretch for, and we fall short. We don't quite get there. It doesn't happen. We're disappointed, either slightly disappointed or crushingly disappointed. But those things happen. And when we talk about resilience, or, you know, having the fortitude to press on in life, it really is about two things: not just having the resilience and fortitude to press on through life, but also having the gusto, the courage to put yourself out there and take chances and go after things that feel like they're unreachable, knowing that probably you're not going to get there, but the fun of trying is what life's all about. And quite often, the older we get, the less apt we are to put ourselves out there, to put ourselves in kind of scary, precarious positions, whether it's dating again after a failed relationship, or, you know, going out and trying to find a new job and a new experience when you're older, right? Or looking forward to maybe saving for a vacation that you never thought you'd be able to afford or get to. Like, we tend to almost become phobic about taking chances or getting excited or, right, looking forward to something, because you'll say to yourself, or people might say to you, why do you keep getting yourself excited about something when you always are disappointed, when you're always are let down? But if we stop putting out those stretch goals, those reach goals, making ourselves a little nervous or uncomfortable, we have no chance of having something wildly unexpected happen, of having that opportunity to do something you never thought was going to happen. If we don't put ourselves out there, it's never going to fall into our lap. And so, even though I was feeling the disappointment in not being able to make this happen, I definitely found that there was the silver lining, one for today's topic of the show. Because while I was prepping for this interview that I hoped that would happen, because I wanted to make sure that if I did get the call, or, you know, from the publicist, that it was going to be able to work, I wanted to at least be educated enough to have a conversation. So I was watching things on YouTube, different interviews, and listening to a lot of different songs. And I came across a documentary, it's like a short interview that John Mayer did about writing the song In Repair. which is a song that I also use in class. And I use it as an example of dealing with breakups and heartache. And so it was really interesting listening to this interview, because he came to a part of the interview where he talked about what inspired the lyrics. And it really struck me, and it became the inspiration for today's show. So let's hear what John Mayer had to say about the writing of the song In Repair.
It's too many shadows in my room. It's too many hours in this midnight.
Idea for In Repair came from this kind of knowledge about the way people are, that we're always either on the way down or the way up. You never really enjoy the moment when it's all put together, because it probably never really is. Those moments where things come apart is only setting you up for that moment where you put it back together again, and you're so surprised that it's coming back together again. There's this beauty in the idea of being in repair.
So John Mayer, in writing the song In Repair, kind of hit on something that's kind of the essence of our psychological experiences, and that's that state of either being together, having everything in order, everything exactly the way we like it, and then moving into a state where everything seems to be falling apart. And how do we learn to flow with those two experiences of feeling like our life is coming together and we've gotten it completely the way we'd like it to be, and we want to hold on and make sure it never changes, and then inevitably everything tends to fall apart, and then we bring ourselves back together trying to hold on, and then it all falls apart. And these cycles of integration and disintegration, as they're called, moving from chaos to a sense of groundedness, from stillness to activity, from sanity to confusion. I mean, these kind of ebbs and flows are really fundamental to our experience as human beings. And what struck me about that is the universality of that. I don't know if I said that word correctly, how it is universal in our experiences, that none of us ever get to a place where we just have it wired and then we just stay on that plane forever. That we're all in some state of repair or disrepair, or together or falling apart. And last week on the show, maybe the week before, we had talked about, you know, mental health and how common, I think it was during the PTSD show, actually, we were talking about how common trauma is in the human experience, that we all will experience some sort of trauma in our lives, and these experiences of anxiety or depression, that they are part of the human journey. If you're lucky enough to experience life, to be fully alive and engaged in it, that you're going to go through periods of anxiety and depression and trauma, repair, disrepair, falling apart. And that ever since then, I've been thinking about this idea of, instead of looking at mental health as wellness, right, being well or not well, at ease or diseased, that if we could just look at these emotional states, these behavioral states, as life, instead of categorizing them as levels of wellness. If I'm feeling anxious, I'm diseased. If I'm calm, I'm fine. If I'm feeling depressed, I'm diseased. If I'm enthusiastic, I'm fine. Instead of labeling each of these mood states that we go through, you know, as either diseased or pathological or normal, what if we just looked at the whole thing as life? And how differently would we behave if we were able to kind of step back and just say, this is all just the flow of life, that there's never really a place where you're just static for long periods of time? Because if we are static for long periods of time, we're not really living. We're really in a stuck kind of flattened space. You know, a lot of people talk about when they take different psychiatric medications that they'll go into a state of feeling stunted, feeling flat, feeling numb, which is unacceptable. And so we really aren't striving to get our life to a place where we're just plateauing and being even keeled without any ups or downs, feelings of joy, because you can't have one without the other, right? You can't have joy without experience sorrow. They dance with each other. You wouldn't know you were in a state of joy if you hadn't experienced a state of sorrow. So I wanted to talk about how we all do that dance between falling apart and then coming back together, and recognizing that even in the darkest periods of our life, when we feel that everything is falling apart, underneath that is always the glimmer of now the opportunity for newness is there. Because there's a danger in being so tightly wound around holding on, keeping everything together, if we're trying to white knuckle ourselves through our lives, like, I don't want anything to change. I don't want to be disrupted. I don't want to feel disintegration of my life. If we hang on, you know, by our fingernails, we could be missing some amazing opportunities or new perspectives or new people. And so I'm wondering how we can allow ourselves to surrender to the process of putting ourselves back together again and again and again, without feeling like or judging these experiences being pathological or normal, diseased or at ease, but just life cycles, that we're never in a state of not being broken in some way. What do you think about that? That idea that maybe we have to accept that we never in a state of not being broken, that something is always in the best of moments slipping out from underneath us. And how do we come to peace with that movement? And then the other idea I was having is about what happens in between the coming together and falling apart and falling apart and coming back together. What is it that happens in between those times? And it's called the liminal space is that space between coming together and falling apart. And it's a Latin word, limen, that's what it comes from, or I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, meaning the threshold. The liminal space is any point or place of entering or beginning, the time between what was and then what's next. It's that place of transition, of waiting, of not knowing. And for many people, that liminal space is really uncomfortable. It's really disorienting to be between a place of knowing and a place of unknowing and just kind of floating. That place of where you feel you know who you are and you're set in your life and your routine, and then that new life and routine that you'll come to create. That liminal space is the in-between, where you're kind of free-floating, free-falling in certain ways. And how do we come to peace with that? So I guess my question for you today is this. Maybe there's two or three questions. One is, do you recognize right now, are you in a period of time of coming together, or are you in a period of time of falling apart? Are you entering a time where you're just kind of entering a new phase, a new time in your life, a new period of coming together? And what is that? What does that feel like? Or do you sense that sand shifting underneath you, and that you can sense the entering into a period of time where you're falling apart? And what does that feel like for you? And then my other question, if that one doesn't resonate, the other question is that feeling of excitement and anticipation. Do you still allow yourself to get excited about things that other people would say that's folly? Why would you allow yourself to go there? That's just a silly fantasy. It's never going to happen. But do you allow yourself those things to get excited about? And what would they be? What is something that you have kind of that excited butterfly feeling about right now? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. And I know I'm kind of going out on a reach with the conversation today also, because it seems like kind of an esoteric conversation to have. But I'm curious to know about your understanding of where you are in your day-to-day or in your life. And that idea of coming together and falling apart, it can be over long periods. Maybe we have this long journey of coming together where you're trying to earn a degree, or you're, you know, pursuing excellence in something, trying to master some skill. That can be, it can be a kind of a long process of coming together and finding a new understanding of yourself. It can be months or even years. Then the falling apart, the slipping away of that sand underneath us, can be months or years in the making. You can see your kids growing and getting ready to move on and out of the house, and that sure thing that you think you understood is slipping maybe a little bit underneath you. And do you see that coming? But often that feeling of coming together and falling apart can be more rapid. It can be in a relationship that seems like it's going to be great, and then 2 weeks later, it all falls apart underneath you. Or maybe you just really were feeling that you were getting it together on a project you were working on, and then as quickly as you thought it was coming together, it falls apart. The coming together and falling apart. How does that look in our life? And it's interesting when I was, you know, kind of reading up, reminding myself about this idea of that liminal space too, that time between coming together and falling apart, or that idea of integrating and disintegrating, you know, moving from one version of ourselves to another version of ourselves. I came across kind of a writing about a Hindu deity, very, I guess, lower level, I'd never read before, that's considered the never not broken goddess. And the whole idea behind the never not broken goddess is that she was able to live in a space of healthy annihilation, the ability to come together and fall apart again and again and again. And through those unexpected changes, the breaking apart and coming back together led her to these stronger and more powerful versions of herself. So I was thinking about all those times in my life that I thought I was, you know, as far as I could get on my path, or as far as I could, you know, get is appreciating who I am, and then having it all crumble and realizing, oh, I still have more to learn. And there's always in that process of having more to learn and then having to trust that what comes out the other side is a more powerful version of myself. And so ultimately, the idea of the never not broken goddess is that the power is being able to break apart and be at peace with that, and trust that that eternal brokenness is not about being diseased or incapable. That eternal brokenness we all experience is also our potential for stronger, more flexible, and robust selves. That's just where I am today. I don't know, Bree, what do you think? Is that too out there? Should I just go back to talking about how handsome John Mayer is and how fun it was being at the show?
I don't know. This seems like a half life evaluation, half love letter to John Mayer moment.
Well, there is a little part of me that hopes that, you know, the band, or he stayed overnight somewhere and he's like meandering around the county, and he'll want to call in and we can have a chat about his lyric writing. Because I really thought I had this great pitch. I really wanted to ask him, you know, he writes as if he's got some sort of psychology degree, a psychological background in these lyrics. And so I want to know, how does he get to that place to write mm-hmm. them?
Yeah, I mean, if John Mayer, if you're listening, yeah, we've got our number, 805-781-3875.
Thank you, Bree.
You're welcome.
You can be my pitch person instead of, you know, having to go out on my own. Because it's an interesting thing, you know, as I said before, it would be easy to come in and do my show. And like at this point in my life at, you know, 56, everything's pretty laid out. No one's really expecting much more from me. You know, I'm not on the growth upward in a lot of ways. So if I just kind of laid back on my laurels from this point on, people wouldn't judge me for that. It's like, yeah, you've done well, you know, you're a grandma, things are great. But my own internal sense that I need to keep striving and thriving and moving forward doesn't allow me to sit still. And I always have that kind of anxious stirring, which is the thing that is so interesting about anxiety in itself, is that our our body can't distinguish between anxiety about something we're excited to do and anxiety about things we're terrified about. You know, it has that same response of rapid heartbeat and dry mouth and feeling like you can't sit still. And so it's what we do with that bodily response, right? That anxious energy response, which determines whether that anxiety is positive or negative for us. In anticipation of going on a trip, I get very anxious thinking about, making sure I'm ready to go. And I can never discern, am I excited about the trip now? Or am I just feeling anxious about all of the travel? Because the feelings are the same inside. And so part of our work as we grow and age is to allow ourselves to keep having that nervous excitement about things, to not judge ourselves or get too comfortable in ourselves, to always kind of embrace that sense of unknowing, not knowing, pushing through, finding things that make us nervous, having a stretch goal, not resting on our laurels. Because as soon as we start resting on our laurels, we start to I want to say rot, but that's a terrible word to use, but we start to get a bit stale. So where are you in all of this? I know I'm not the only one thinking these things. 805-781-3875. Do you feel like you're in a state of coming together right now? Or are you in a state of falling apart? Are you in repair or are you in disrepair? And is there something you're really excited and anticipating? Marvin, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm a young person. I'm a college student. And I sort of feel like I don't really know where I am because, because I'm so young, I don't feel like I don't know if, if I'm coming apart or am I coming together. So it's sort of this mystery that I think is disorienting sometimes. I think a lot of young people feel that way.
And so did you go, and I'm just curious, as a college student, was there hope that going to college would give you the clarity?
Yes, that's part of the disappointment. I thought I would go to college and find my people and find out who I was. And I went and I realized, oh, there's still all these swirling questions and all these disappointments, and I don't know if where I'm headed. And so certainly that was the hope, but I was disappointed in a way. Mm-hmm.
So has there been a point in your process of going through school where you felt like you had come together in some way and now you're in another falling apart? Do you feel like you've still been in the process of trying to come together the whole college experience?
Well, I really like this idea that you were talking about earlier about just sort of everything being part of the flow of life and liminal spaces and whatnot, because I don't think that there have been, prolonged many-year periods of my life where I felt, this is it, I am together. But there have been moments, small chunks of times where I feel, this is it, I feel happier, or I feel satisfied, I feel fulfilled, I feel that I have a purpose. And that doesn't mean that I'm not also sad during those moments, but I felt that this is what I should be doing. And so I think it's just kind of a fluctuation in on really small scales, just in terms of moments or weeks or sometimes months where that's happening.
So here's my challenge for you. In this moment, choose one thing, one moment where you felt like I am together in this space. Can you remember that? Like I've got it together.
I can think of, I can just think of being with people that I love. I went to a school, a fancy school, and I thought, oh, I'll be with all these really smart people and whatever, and that'll fulfill me. But the moments that I think I'm thinking of right now where I feel most fulfilled is just being with my family and some of our close family friends and playing, silly board games and feeling that sense of community and love. And so thinking about how I can replicate that in my own life going forward, not being stuck in that, but creating something that's similar to that of my own.
So it's interesting because it sounds like, and it's common as a college student that you're in that liminal space still, because liminal space is actually just one part of the three pieces of ritual transformation. It's actually, there's a preliminal stage where you actually recognize that something's changing. That would be the falling apart. And that's graduating from high school and knowing that you're moving into this college period of time. So that preliminal graduation is the signal that we're entering into this liminal space. And then quite often at the graduation post-college, or, you know, when you finish your college studies, you go into the next phase, the transformation, the transition to the next phase takes place. And it's almost impossible during your college years where you're earning your degree to be outside of the liminal space, because by definition, you're in that period of time of leaving your childhood into your young adulthood. And so to help with that liminal space, that unknowingness, that anxiety that comes with it, to pay attention to and mark those times where you feel grounded. Oh, this evening playing board games with my family, I felt grounded. So although I'm still swimming in this sea of liminal space, to really recognize those grounded moments. Oh, I hiked to the top of this mountain and I'm looking out over the ocean or wherever you are, and I feel really settled. So to find those moments within the liminal space are the best way to help navigate, you know, that inevitable, because you can't rush to the end of your transition until you actually finish your studies and graduate. And then it'll start a whole nother liminal, but at least you'll have that moment.
Well, that makes me feel better. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in. Enjoy your day and enjoy your liminal journey. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And I pose the idea of looking at our lives not as being at ease or diseased, or our mental health being good or bad, normal or abnormal, but instead to step back and say the whole process of living is about moving through periods of time where we're coming together or falling apart. Right, we're in repair or disrepair, that we're never really finding a place where we get to that we stay for forever. And so that's the topic today. I'm curious to know, do you find yourself in a place where you're transitioning, where you're falling apart, or do you feel like you're in a moment of time where you're coming together? And what does that feel like? Bree, let's listen to No Such Thing for a little bit. We're going to come back and take your calls at 805-781-3875. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Let's think about those transitions.
Welcome to the real world, she said to me, condescendingly. Take a seat, take your life, plot it out in black and white. Well, I never lived the dream of the prime kings and the drama queens. I'd like to think the best of me is still hiding up my sleeve.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is John Mayer singing about that real world. And as I mentioned earlier, I use quite a few of John Mayer's songs in my classes to help exemplify different psychological experiences that are universal to all of us, and to help normalize those life experiences. And this idea that there is no such thing as the real world, that it's all the social context that we buy into and all determine that is the only way to behave or the only opportunities that we have. And if we were to kind of allow ourselves to step back and blow up those social expectations, who would we be? And how would we choose to live day to day? And how would we come to accept those life transitions that are inevitable? And to stop judging ourselves as maybe being broken or together, but to just say, you know what, when I'm in my together space, it's just that momentary holding place until I come apart and then reimagine or reinvent a new self in a new way. It's just the whole process of living. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Is it JP?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah. I just heard when you were talking about a period of transition or repairing or disrepairing, and I think I'm in a pretty good stage of transition the last few months, and yeah, reflecting on it, it's refreshing, I guess, to go through. I was a career for the last 9 years. I'm just got to Santa Barbara for a job interview tomorrow. I just got into a PhD program, continuing work for my master's degree, which is about 10 years ago also, and just out of a 4.5-year relationship the last few months. So, yeah, I guess I just felt, like you said, stagnant or stale, not going through some changes, and it's refreshing now. Going through those.
And so was there a slow recovery up to this, hey, here's where I'm going to go? Or did you wake up one morning and say, oh, I know what I'm going to do? You know, how? What did that transition feel like?
I think I had felt a lot of last year, I did feel like stale. You know, I'm 38 years old now, and I think I was feeling like I was staring down 50. Mm-hmm. And not that 50 is a bad thing. It just felt to me like I felt like, wow, like this is just flying by. And I felt like something was missing. And one by one, I think I broke off the relationship with my fiance. I think I felt like that was part of, I needed to pursue some things in my own life. And I felt like I was constantly having to make negotiations with myself or missing out on things that I wanted to do and then feeling guilty because I felt like I couldn't do it because of my partner. And then one by one, like just, you know, a few months later, this job opportunity came up. I got into grad school and they all sort of seemed to dovetail and point towards moving. And now it feels like it's just a few weeks off of everything coming together.
And isn't it interesting how when we allow ourselves to go through one door, so many other doors and avenues start to become illuminated that we couldn't imagine having been there before. But it's that first step, right? It's that first door that we push through is huge.
Oh, absolutely. And there were a few other opportunities that like kind of came and, you know, I felt like I'd be scrambling to sort of, you know, make those fit. And now it just seems like everything's sort of happening in a way that like a puzzle, like it's finally clicking at the end. And so and now I don't feel like I'm staring down 50 anymore. I feel like I'm, you know, my age again, I guess you could say.
No, but that's beautiful, not staring down 50, but in some ways anticipating the opportunities of life. And I think that's just a perspective shift, because at every age, it can either be, oh, my, I'm going to be 40, or oh, my, I'm going to be 70, or it can be, oh, wow, I'm going to be 70. You know, what does that mean? And it's that perspective.
Sure, sure.
And so can I ask, JP, before I let you go, what is the PhD that you're going to be pursuing?
I'm looking, it'll be in the education department, and I'm looking at the concepts of identity and burnout in young athletes who choose to specialize in a single sport at a young age.
That's fascinating. When you get into your studies, will you contact me and come and talk about it? Because it's actually an area that I find fascinating when it comes to parenting and our social story about, you know, pushing our children to become phenoms and what that causes in the long term for our kids.
No, that's exactly it. So, I will look you up and send you an email or something.
All right. Be in touch. Take care. Drive safely. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And we're talking about, I guess, life transitions, coming together, falling apart, going through doors, realizing that we're never not broken. I just love that perspective shift because, you know, when we talk about the real world and the context and living a life that we're told we're supposed to be living, and then we get to that life, and if it's not satisfying, do we just determine that we're the problem? You know, do we just say, well, I this was a life I was told I would enjoy and I'm not, so it must be me? Or do we blow that life up and look for another direction. And then we have to pay attention to the other people in our social world. If we find ourselves up against a wall and feeling like something needs to shift, when we want to blow things up or falling apart, what are the consequences of choosing to fall apart? If we're not married, or we don't have children that we're responsible to, or, you know, mortgages that we have, and we still have the freedom to kind of blow those things up, to let that life fall apart, do we have the courage to kind of go along until we get to that new space? And if we were to talk about ourselves, our psyches, as never being not broken, how much peace would we have when we go through periods of time where we feel anxious or depressed? We're just like, well, this is just, this must be the period of time between growth. This must be the holding period before I feel great joy again. How would we behave differently if that's what we were told is the truth? That joy is kind of the fun alter side of the other piece of life, which is feeling kind of broken. And it's interesting because there's a lot of philosophers and developmental psychologists and wise elders of all different religions and backgrounds who talk about these periods of time of disintegration and integration, or chaos and groundedness, as just being kind of in the normal piece. Like, this is not a new idea. John Mayer didn't write In Repair and create a whole other way of looking at stability. I mean, he was drawing from something that's ancient wisdom. And Pema Chodron, who is a philosopher and a wise elder, writes about the disintegration this way. We think that the point in life is to pass the test or overcome the problem. But the truth is that things don't really ever get solved. They come together and they fall apart. Then they come together again and fall apart again. It's just like that. The healing comes from letting there be room for all of this to happen. Room for grief, room for relief, room for misery, and for joy. And so, if we're able to like feel the world changing around us, to accept the absolute impermanence of everything around us, and not hang on, as I mentioned before, that white knuckling gripping with terror to hang on to this life or this self that we know because we're too afraid to let go and kind of drop into the abyss. If we hang on, what are we missing out on? And even more so than just life transitions, what about in that day to day? When was the last time you let yourself get so excited about something you had butterflies? That anticipation. You always look at kids, you know, they're so excited for the holidays and Christmas and Easter, whatever those days are that are so excited, full of excitement and anticipation, or the first day of school, which is both excitement and terror at the same time, or that first day of going out for a sports team, or, you know, meeting a new guy or girl or a new friend, and that excitement and the butterflies. When was the last time you felt like that? Because we see it in our children all the time. I see it in my granddaughter every hour. You know, there's something new and exciting in her life as a toddler, moment to moment. And then there's the great disappointment that she experiences when we say, no, you can't do that. Or we, you know, take away the dangerous item she's playing with. But it's interesting that in our young lives, everything is about anticipation and excitement and, you know, what's happening next, and the great joy of the unknown and the hopefulness that something's going to go our way. But it seems that the older we get and the more disappointments we experience, instead of continuing to have that hopeful sense, that sense of joy or curiosity, we shut that down. That we, I don't want to get hurt, or I don't want to be disappointed, or I don't want to put myself out there and feel ridiculous or silly. And so that we stop allowing ourselves to even have the butterflies of excitement that something new might come along. My daughter and I were talking this weekend about dating, and Bree, you might appreciate this, that if we look back on our younger years when we're dating, that in hindsight, you think, oh, why didn't I spend more time just enjoying the process of dating, of meeting new people that, you know, I would have never met before, of all the different personalities or kind of things they introduce you to, or hobbies? Like, why, when we have the opportunity to date, do we just really enjoy and embrace kind of that nervous butterflies you get when you meet someone you're attracted to and wonder if they'll like you back? you know, it's almost wasted on that period of time, because when you're young, all you're thinking about is, oh, I hate this feeling of feeling nervous or wondering if the person's going to like me. I just want to find my one person and settle down, you know, and then you get settled down and you look back and in hindsight go, man, that was fun. Do you have that?
Yeah, I definitely understand those feelings. I get those same feelings whenever, like, I audition for something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I was very involved with theater throughout my life, and so similar feelings. I've been known to take a vomit or two before auditions, not necessarily before first dates, thank goodness.
But it's funny because we would mostly say, oh, that, what a horrible thing to have to go through. But
yeah,
it's a reflection of kind of that hopeful excitement, anticipation, a positive vomit, if
yeah,
we may say.
Vomit of good feelings.
Exactly, if there is such a thing. So that's what I'm curious to know. Like, when was the last time you allowed yourself to get excited and anticipate something, even if you knew in the back of your mind there's a greater chance of disappointment than the great thing happening? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And, you know, you can be part of the conversation by calling in. I know, again, people get nervous about making that call. What if I say something? I feel silly. What if the right thing to say? But this is a great example of, like, doing that thing that makes you feel nervous and anxious. And then you do it and you hang up and you go, huh, it wasn't that bad. Or maybe it was kind of fun. Or maybe we connected. Maybe I shared something that was really important to me. And now other people have been inspired or felt moved or helped by what I had to say. And so, you know, I would imagine if they look at the things that are terrifying for people, public speaking is number one. Most people would rather die than have to speak in public. And I imagine calling into a radio show is, like, right up there also.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did it when I was a kid.
Yeah. And calling is like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. But then you feel kind of powerful. And I mean, we've talked a lot this year about how to make change in government, or how to have our voices be heard, to not feel hopeless or helpless. And again, as we get older, it gets easy to get kind of rutted and cynical and say, well, I can't make a difference, or nothing's going to change. I'm always going to be like this, and the government's always going to be like this, and the world's always going to be like this, which is why we turn and look at young people and say, it's up to you, because we know that that youthful exuberance is the only thing that we have to hope for. But we really can't rely just on youthful exuberance, because that robustness of life has to live in all of us, you know, or we get to 75 or 80 and go, well, my time has passed and I'm just writing it out till I'm done. That's not living. You know, I think we're constantly supposed to be pushing and being robust. So, you know, again, we've talked about change and making the phone calls. A lot of people have been, you know, talking about, like, call your congressman or call
your reluctant therapist.
Yes, call your reluctant therapist. But whatever it is, I'm thinking, you know, congressman or your city council or your mayor, or, you know, calling and, you know, and having your voice be heard. And I've done those phone calls, and I get nervous calling, and it's just an answering machine a lot of the times, so you might get a live person. But after I make the calls, because remember, at the beginning of the year, my New Year's resolution was to do something for 5 minutes, five times a week, to better my life and the world around me. And so I've been working, plugging away. I give myself a penny a day, thanks to Trish, who sent me all the pennies to pay attention. But to do something 5 minutes a day, five times a week, out of my comfort zone. And it's been interesting, because 5 minutes can feel like a long time when it comes to maybe calling a congressman or expressing your disappointment in something that's happened to your city council, or, you know, something that's going on in your community, or in the positive, showing up for a work day. I mean, if we're not a little bit nervous, we're not really alive. What do you think about that? If we're not a little bit anxious, then we're not really participating. And I remember when I started my graduate program, one of the professors I had right at the beginning, one of the first things he talked about was that all of us have something that is a neurosis that we struggle with, that we all have something. And he said, if I could choose the one thing that I could struggle with, I would choose anxiety. If I got to choose my neurosis, I would choose anxiety, because people who are anxious are the most alive people in the world. Because when you're anxious, you're aware of everything that's happening around you. Your senses are awake and noticing and taking in stimuli. And although it can be overwhelming and uncomfortable and, distracting and disorienting, that sense of noticing every sound and every smell and every stimulus is the most alive you'll ever be. And it was in that moment that my years of struggling with anxiety completely shifted, because I saw it in a whole different way, as something to embrace and revel in, instead of trying to tamp down or to manage or to eradicate. So how do we change those perspectives? 805-781-3875. Hi, Joel, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling to talk to you about the part you referred to. As we get a little bit older, we become maybe a little more comfortable with things not going the way we would like them to, or we let some of our excitement or our vigor disappear, mm-hmm. or it challenges us. So I'm in the process. I'm working on something that I've been doing for about 6 or 7 years. I'm going to go make a presentation this weekend. And on the one hand, I'm really excited about that. And then on the other hand, having, I won't say battled with it, but worked through it for so long, my expectations, that excitement, isn't where I would like it to be. You still anticipate good things, but you're not, you also anticipate it not going the way you want.
And almost you're allowing,
because
it sounds like you're saying, I've lost a little of the youthful exuberance and I've let a little more of the cynic take over. So you're almost allowing your expectations of disappointment to outweigh the anticipation of success.
It is. And what's interesting is it's the I'll call it waffling back and forth between the two, where, I can come across extremely confident and passionate and dialed in on it. And yet at the same time, when you've worked on something that long, and you've had multiple hurdles with it, it's like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder, and the other one saying, yeah, well, you're there and this is exciting and all of that, but you know how it's gone before, mm-hmm. so don't be surprised.
So who's your biggest cheerleader on this project?
Me.
Do you need another fan, Joel?
Yes, I do.
You need a witness who can reinvigorate that excitement for you, because I think that internal dialogue in trying to be your own cheerleader isn't enough. I think you need one other person that's got the fire with you.
Okay.
Who would that be?
It's the idea is not. I tend to do things that are a little unusual or a little different, mm-hmm. and so the friends of mine who are aware of it, they like it, but the pragmatic side of them says, you don't have to go that far with it. Do it a little bit more safe. Do it more traditional. And then let it evolve and see if it goes there. So I don't, the people that I have shared that with steer me away from it, and I keep going in the more, shall we say, adventurous direction.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's part of my makeup. That's part of what drives me. Is mm-hmm. I'm the person who. My car's got to be a little bit different, or I'm not afraid for it to be different, and I like doing things differently. I get impetus from that.
And I love that you recognize that and hold that and don't let it go for anything. But when you're looking for that cheerleader, I think that there is a college-age student, right? Someone who hasn't gotten to the cynical or the pragmatic. They haven't let their, worldly experience make them so wise that they lose out on the imagination part.
What's really interesting about that is that the presentation this weekend is going to be almost exclusively to a large group of entrepreneurial younger college type people. And so it'll actually be pretty defining to see if I can get it across to them.
Well, I have high expectations for you. Because you haven't let yourself get cynical. I'm just gonna send out my great imagineering energy to you. But also, Joel, I just want to leave you with this thought: run it by, find some young person in that demographic, and run it by them before the weekend.
I have. He's gonna be there.
Okay, good. Let me know how it goes.
I will.
That's what we're talking about. How do we keep that excitement and anticipation as we go through life? How do we still put ourselves out there? Something to think about as you move on through your week. I'm heading off to Alaska tomorrow. Nervous excitement, anticipation, but I will have a show next week about that experience in Alaska. Until then, thank you for listening to Public Radio KCBX. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can find me at Elizabeth at TheReluctantTherapist.com. You can send me an email to Elizabeth at TheReluctantTherapist.com. You can find us on our Facebook page. And John Mayer, I still have faith in you that we will find each other some way along the way and have a conversation. But until then, I leave you with the song that inspired today's show, In Repair.
Shadows in my room. Too many hours in this midnight. Too many corners in my mind. So much to do to set my heart.